Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Adam Barrett's on the line. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Fred. How's it going?
Good. Now, we're recording this just shortly after the RAMS conference, and I'm sure you sat in on a couple of presentations. And were they all memorable? You got the 3 points and great takeaway action items from every one of those presentations you saw?
Nope.
No. These are our peers, and they've worked really, really hard to make these presentations and do this research and, you know, new advancements and stuff. But I know I'm being facetious, of course.
I know.
What's with it with engineers and presenting?
Well, it's not, I don't even think it's just engineers. It's, you know, it's the, if you think about it, you know, what have they been working on? They've been working on their research. They've been working on their projects. And the presentation is, you know, something that you have to quickly throw together before you, you know, before you have to present it. And, you know, people will say, my presentation didn't come out well, and I don't understand why. I mean, I started it yesterday and I worked all night on it, and, you know, well, because it's a whole craft unto itself.
Well, you see presentations that are basically a walk through their paper. Right. They'll say, here's the title and here's the abstract and here's the three things I'm going to tell you. It's one we learned in school. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you. Right. I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you what I told you.
Right. Exactly. And it's the, you know, thanks very much, but I can print it out and read it on my own time. I don't need you to read it to me.
Well, there have been a few that I've seen in the past where it really is just the paper on slides, and it's full text. It's just massive amount of reading. And then, you know, you really hope the presenter doesn't read it to you. And I've seen some that are pretty darn close to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's basically they're not acknowledging that it is a whole nother, you know, discipline and art, you know, of communicating graphically, you know, and just taking what they've written down and thinking that, you know, if you split up in slides, people will read it. So, you've inspired me a lot with this and given me a lot of good feedback. You've inspired me to invest in it, you know, in the sense of time and pick it up as a skill set the same way, you know, somebody would, you know, maybe practice public speaking or whatever, different ways of communicating. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at, you know, and you've introduced me to some different resources, one being Nancy Duarte. We were trying to figure out the right way to say her name.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, and she has some very good material. I purchased two of her books, and it's really neat. It's really eye-opening when you read the things, you know, she's saying and describing, and you're like, yeah, totally. You know, you realize that this difference of storytelling graphically, and you start to think of the different types of slide, you know, presentations you've seen and you know, how they've affected you differently. So it's actually, I'm going through right now, and I have a seminar I'm putting on in Boston later next month, and so I'm actually going through and like entirely revamping that you know presentation with, you know, with a lot of this, you know, style. And it'll probably be, you know, be fun as the years go by to see how, if I continue to try to learn this, how I progress. I'm sure I'll look back on this one and be like, wow, that was horrible. But if I go back to last year, it was like even worse. So
yeah, it is, I agree with you, it is an art and it is something people can learn. Nancy's books, I think one's called Slideology and another one's called Resonate, if I remember the two titles.
That's correct.
Yeah. And she was the person behind crafting the presentations that Steve Jobs did when he introduced the iPhone and the Mac Air and things like that. And at that level, they plan for months, those presentations, and timing and word choice and pacing. And you usually have some big event when he pulled out the Mac Air from the envelope, the manila envelope. That was completely thought through and planned as a memorable.
Yeah, I'll never forget seeing that in a commercial. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, what an impression.
Right. Yeah. And so but whether you're trying to sell an iPhone or you're trying to convince somebody that your research that you're doing it as a novel new acceleration model for some phenomena that you're talking about. You're trying to inform, entertain, and educate. And usually you want your audience to do something different after the presentation. So the part that many of what I saw at RAMS was they forgot the part that there's a takeaway. There's a call to action. There's something you want us to do different. And it might be just look at your data differently. It might be analyze it with this new tool. It might be research some more if it applies to your situation. But the presentation will say, well, that's my study. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, nothing else. And like,
yeah, it's the thing is, I think the first thing and what I've realized is that there isn't a way to just make a better presentation in the sense of implying that just do what you're doing, but do it differently. Mm-hmm. You really have to acknowledge that it's a time investment. It's a phase of your project. You know, like, you know, a good presentation could take 40 to 80 hours of work to make a really good, super professional one. You know, it's not, whereas right now it's something that people probably almost in a lot of cases account zero time for in their schedule.
Well, they'll take their template and put in titles as their outline, and then they'll put three bullets on each slide. And
yeah,
those are the three top things I want to talk about on each slide. The other ones I see is where the slide deck becomes the project report. There's raw data in there. There's super complex calculations and the flow of how you got to the results and super dense imagery and photos and graphics.
Oh, actually, do you know what? That's so funny you bring that up, because I actually would give a thumbs up to that. Do you know why? I recently had a customer, and it's a name everybody would recognize. They're definitely do some of the leading technology in the country or world. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked. So they asked for a reliability program, plan was one of the things I was coming in to do. And, I wrote it in a Word document, and they were like, no, just, do it in slides. And I'm like, no, but this is a plan. They're like, yeah, just, they're like, we pretty much now almost exclusively communicate internally with each other through slides. Mm-hmm. So in other words, instead of, and then I saw what they were doing, and kind of what you just described were tons of information thrown in slides, but effectively it acknowledged that kind of what we're saying with presentations, you have to go a step further to, inform people and summarize. They were taking this in place of handing somebody a plan or a report. It was to hand them a slide deck for them to read at their desk, you know, but it was organized in a way where you kind of could go at whatever level of depth you want. There was that high level kind of, you could skim through it and get all the high points the way you can in a slide deck. And I thought that was really interesting. I was like, wow, that's I'd never done that with a slide deck to have it replace effectively a plan or, something like that and handle that detail.
I've seen it. I've hesitate on it. It's easier to read on screen. I think that's the biggest draw, is it's much easier to read on screen a slide deck. It still takes a craft to do it. It's still not the same as a report. It's still got to flow regularly because it's not as dense as a report, where you can say, go to page 3, it's go to page 38. And that you can build internal links and other things in there, but it's, I don't get that. I just have really resisted doing that and don't get it. If I'm going to do a presentation to talk about the plan, it's a completely different structure than the plan, whether I do it in Word or PowerPoint or whatever. I think the capturing all the information and having the very dense slides oftentimes get in the way of what's your message? What's the point here?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you're bringing a plan to the group and it's different than the way they've done in the past, in my mind, the presentation is really setting up why and getting buy-in to this change is necessary and getting people on board with that. But the details of the high temperature over life test and the, the thermal cycling for an environmental test are part of a plan. They don't really need to be part of that discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the super dense ones tend to cloud it up with way too much information that detracts from what the presentation is about. And I'm going with the presentation here, even if it is of a plan, is that there's some point. Is why are you presenting this plan? You need resources. You need money to fund it. You need buy-in. You need samples. You need something. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have to present anything about the plan. You just go execute it. But what I think, and what Nancy and there's another company called Rexy Media, and they do a great job of building presentations that influence people, that create change. And you start with, well, what's the outcome I need from this presentation? Is it the budget, for example? Well, then every slide should aim towards that objective. And it should basically, at the end of the presentation, you get a decision, right? It's either yes, no, or call me in a week. I have to compare some other things. Mm-hmm. But if it's, here's the plan, and there's no objective to why you're talking about the plan, well, different people in the audience are going to think, well, they want money, they want samples, they want resources, they want something, or they're all set, they're ready to go, they're just going to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not clear in your audience from the presentation itself, then what have you accomplished? You've confused the situation, I think, more than you've helped it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and presentations more than just slide decks. I was teaching a class some years ago, and my laptop died at lunch, and I knew the material, and I had the outline of what we wanted to talk about that afternoon. So I just used the whiteboard and some paper.
But that's kind of thing. I mean, but that Nancy makes a big point about is that it's an aid to your discussion. It can't be a crutch. You know, it's very obvious if you know the content. You know, to what degree on that scale is you know the content versus you're reading it to them. And it really should be to the point that you're telling them everything and these are visuals to help you tell it. So, yeah, I guess that is kind of interesting. That would be a good measure where if the computer died, could you continue with this with just less visual aid but still communicate everything? And that probably would be a good metric to indicate that you've prepared it well and it's, you know, it stands and it's the whole structure is good.
Yeah, and it's also if you know your presentation well enough and you have a clear purpose of what you're trying to accomplish with this presentation, you don't need slides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, politicians hadn't used slides for decades or centuries. The great orators would create word pictures. They would create storylines and frameworks within their discussion that we can use slides to highlight. But the slide itself doesn't have to carry the whole thing. One of the things that Rexy Media talks about is that the ability of a person to remember things is pretty limited when you give them multiple input channels. So if you're talking to them and you have a visual that they're supposed to interpret or read or wrestle with to understand, if it's not blatantly clear what it is, you're splitting their attention.
Yeah.
And the likelihood of them remembering something is significantly reduced. And yes, there's people learn different ways. There's arguments for that, but we're not in a classroom. We're trying to influence them to do something.
Yep.
And yep. So aligning the imagery so that it is supportive of your talk, of your presentation, of your request, essentially, reinforces what you're saying. And it can add elements of humor that's harder to do if you're not a comedian, if your timing's not off, but an image that adds a little humor to the situation. And what Nancy talks about is the pacing. And it's a completely different structure that she talks about with some of the greatest speeches that she analyzed. And one of them, I think we talked about it briefly before, was let's say we're going to do a reliability plan, and it's going to be radically different than what they used to do. In the current state is that, and she uses it as creating a tension between the current state and the future state. And we want to move the organization to implement the future state. It's kind of the way she structured it in the little bit of language she uses. But the speech could start off with, you know, we've got field returns, we're getting issues in the field, we've got, the situation is that our products aren't reliable. You might talk about that for a few minutes. And then you say, wouldn't it be nice if our products actually worked and our customers were happy with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right? There's a huge gap there. Everybody in the room's like, okay. Mm-hmm. How are you going to make that happen? And then as you go through the presentation, you're building out the reliability plan saying, and this part helps us get that gap. This part helps us get this gap. If we don't do risk assessment, we're surprised late in the program and it's delayed. If we do FMEA early, we're much more likely to find issues and avoid being late in the program. And start creating that dichotomy of what we do now versus what we could do. And so by the end of the program, the presentation, everybody's like, well, duh, we need to do that.
Yep. Right.
And the alternative is you say, I'm going to tell you about a reliability plan. And then here's the 3 points. And I tell you that we're going to do FMEA. We're going to do this and this and this. And I just gave you a presentation about the reliability plan. There's nothing in there to compare it to. There's no basis to say, what difference does it make? Mm-hmm. What's the value of doing this plan? It's informative, right? Told me exactly what you wanted to do in the plan. It's out of context, though. I don't know how to judge this. Mm-hmm. And so thinking through the structures of a presentation, and Nancy talks about a couple different ways of doing that. There's ways to build out a plan or a presentation that helps people understand the context and how what you're proposing will make a difference. And so asking for funds or money or buy-in or whatever then becomes much more direct. Now, and Adam, I'm sure you've seen people that are really good at their presentations. Is what they're doing manipulating the audience? Is it done, you know, not the obvious used car salesman, but somebody that's really good at sales? They're usually good at presenting.
Isn't that the intention? Isn't that the intention, to manipulate the audience? You want them to do something at the end, or to realize something, or to think about something, or
right?
I mean that goes back to exactly you said that earlier. You said, what's the point if you're not, you know, when you're finished, asking them to do something, influencing their opinion, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say that it, without a doubt, is manipulation. I mean, manipulation has a negative connotation because it's, you know, some implied that you're, you know, it's for negative reasons, but manipulation can be, you know, positive or negative. And it definitely is. That's the intent. Otherwise, there's kind of no point in doing it. You could just give them some paper.
Right. And I think, manipulation is kind of a term to excite people about it, but it really is about using the skills that we have available, the tool. If we were going to go work on your, like you, Adam, working on your car, if you only had a blunt screwdriver and that was the only tool you had, there's some things you could do on the vehicle. If you have the right tools, there's a whole different set of things you could do and actually execute a tune-up, for example, or an oil change. Although I think you talked about using your screwdriver to take an oil filter off.
Yes, very creative use. It was a pierce and turn kind of methodology.
I was remembering that episode. I'm like, well, wait a second. If I use a screwdriver, he uses that for
he doesn't stamp need a, stuff with it.
Yeah, he doesn't need whatever that other tool's called to take off an oil filter.
Yeah, I'm not running down to the store. I got to get this done.
That's right. But it's and you mentioned it earlier. It can be a study, and there are good presenters out there, and there are people that are very, very good at it, and we can learn a lot from them. We've mentioned a couple of resources. There's more. If I'm not terribly interested in a topic, say back at RAMS, there's usually 4 papers in a session, and nothing was calling me to go somewhere else, I would watch how they presented. I learned as much about people presenting by watching presenters and what to do or what not to do. I think one of my favorites was a professor. It wasn't at RAMS, it was another conference. He started talking and somebody raised their hand and he looked at him and said, well, I hope you have a good question. And he hesitated for a minute and he asked a question about something, you know, a technical detail of something that this guy was talking about. And he goes, you need to read the book. That is not a good question.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody asked a question for the rest of the session. He just shut it down. So there's the slides is one part of it. The other part is how you present, how you talk to people, how you cover the material, your voice, your pacing, your gestures, how you handle questions.
But the realization that, like, I've come to is, like, that's, you know, that's public speaking, right? And we kind of, we are aware that that's an investment. You know, we take classes on public speaking. It's required in a lot of college curriculums, you know, that's right. And we, you know, we invest in it. But it's kind of funny to now think of the, you know, PowerPoint, well, not PowerPoint, but presentation slides as is also a craft, an art, you know, and a time investment as opposed to a way that you just summarize your existing material, which is the way, especially engineers think about it, right? Because we aren't, we tend to be very analytical, and if the facts, you know, you just need the numbers on the page and, you know, and it was a way to just take all your material and throw it onto something that, a piece of software that makes it easy to project, right?
Unfortunately, so. Microsoft PowerPoint and other software packages tend to give you a default that is actually the basis for the death by PowerPoint kind of formats. It's a title at the top and three bullets.
Yeah.
You know, and six words per bullet. You know, where did that come along as being the right way to present, or a good way to present even? You know, it's, I'm trying to think of some other good references. I know on SlideShare, it's a different format because there's often not a voiceover it. You're not presenting in front of it. The presentations there tend to stand alone. They're rarely super dense. It's rarely that they're just but they tell a story. They take people on a journey, or they do. Those are the ones that tend to get a gazillion views on them, is because they're engaging in and of their own right.
Yeah,
but that's different than if you're talking to it. If you want the, if you're presenting and you want them to take away key information, the slides may provide that. But it's also much more effective just to give them a piece of paper, a handout, make it look like a slide, you know, for your client. That here's what you put on your office wall. This is your takeaway. These are the main points. This is the key formula or whatever it is. There's no reason they need to print all of the slides if that's not a document in and of itself to carry the material away. So I remember I sent one of my slides that was based on this. It's just supporting my talk to the RAMS committee, and immediately got feedback of, well, where's the meat? Where's the presentation? I says, you got it. It's eight slides and it has the key point and supports my paper and what I want to talk about. And I go, no, you need more words on every slide. There's not enough here. What are people going to read? And so I pulled up the presentation guidelines for presenters that said, you know, use very few words, use imagery, make them large text, you know, don't read your slides. I sent it back to him and says, well, I'm following your guidelines. And his response was, well, nobody does that. You got to fit what everybody else is using. And I'm like, no, I don't.
So how did it settle out? Did you have to expand on it? Or did they
he backed down and I presented my presentation and I got lots of great compliments on it. And, you know, my close was, read the paper for more details. Get in touch with me if you have any questions.
Well, I mean, that's a huge, you know, shift, is the idea of that it can't stand on its own, right? Because that's where that anxiety to have more in there comes from, at least for me.
Yeah.
I feel like, because people say, oh, send me the slide deck, I'll look it over.
Right.
So you feel like it has to stand on its own, which is entirely different than it just simply being visual aids for a discussion, you know, for, you know, just speaking to.
Well, if you look at Steve Jobs' presentations where he's selling iPhones, for example, they don't stand on their own.
Right.
There's no way that stand on. And when I was at HP, this Nancy Durante was also coaching our CEO at the time, and the slides were very much in support. And we were internally, we got a lot of training on doing it. And it's a culture change for a lot of people. So let's wrap it up. I got one key point that I think people can take away. It's related to what we've been talking about. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Adam. What's your last slide? What do you put on your last slide of your deck?
Thank you for attending. No, I'm just kidding. well, it has to be it should be a call to action. It should be something that they walk away and they're going to do. You're inspiring them to do something.
Right. And now at RAMS, and over the years I've seen it, it's either questions and contact information or a thank you or a combination of those things.
Right.
Is if your format, and what it was at RAMS is it was like a 20, 25 minute talk and then a Q&A period, is the last slide in those cases, if what you really want are people's input and questions, is ask, you know, instead of saying just questions or it's time for questions or please ask your questions, or do you, I've heard presenters do it, do you have any questions? Well, that's a yes, no question in itself. People can say yes or no, and they've satisfied that request. Instead, just say, what are your questions?
Mm.
It pre-assumes that there are questions, and there almost always are, right? Well, what are your questions?
I also think it's strange that we force people to save up their questions to the end because, well, one, a lot of people are going to forget them or they're going to lose motivation because they've been continuing to listen to other parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I do anything, you know, in education or seminars, I always, you know, tell people, I guilt them into it. I say, this is a discussion. Please indicate that you want to ask a question about what I'm speaking about at the moment. Mm-hmm. And if I get to the end of this presentation and there's been no back and forth discussion, I'm going to feel like I didn't reach anybody, you know, it's a, and you know, I put a little
we'll
bit of
guilt
in
there.
We'll have
to work on that. We'll have to work on guilting your audience. To, you
guilt, know. Yeah, exactly.
There's it's other like ways to make it safe for them to ask questions.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll have to work on that. Adam. Yeah.
Another, you're hurting my feelings.
Another topic. Yeah, and, but we can take away that it's, don't put the entire content on your slides. It's there to support you and to convey the message, and it's an extension of it. And we'll add some references to the show notes of good examples and a couple of references that can get you going on learning more of the art and science of creating a very effective presentation. Let's leave it like that. Does that sound like a good summary, Adam?
I think so.
All right. Good. We'll be back. We'll have to talk about presentation some more. I think there was... it's something that it's missing and we got to talk about more. So we'll be back. Thanks, Adam.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.